time. And I want to say, so David, we're very grateful that you guys have volunteered to come out, and it's always nice to see the group show up and support. And Amy did such a great job last week, so I know you're going to do an even better job, right? Please help me welcome Elizabeth.
We're mic'd. My name's Elizabeth. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Elizabeth.
I want to thank you for asking Simple Actions to speak. It's always my honor and privilege to be able to share my experience, strength, and hope in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll quickly qualify myself and then kind of go through the normal what life was like, what happened. Hopefully I'll get to what life is like today. My sobriety date is May 29th, 2017. I have a home group at Simple Actions. We meet on Monday nights at 7 p.m. at Ghent United Methodist Church. We're a big book step study speaker meeting, and yes, that's a lot to say at one time. But we go through the 12 steps as it's written in the first 164 pages. And we read directly from the book, and then we have two people who share their experience and strength and hope on that reading. I currently do not have a service position, which is kind of a miracle, but we have a lot of new home group members, so all the positions were filled this year. I have a sponsor. I've worked the 12 steps with her more than once. I sponsor other women. I take meetings to the psych center, all the normal stuff that we love to be able to do. I think that's all my qualifiers. Okay, so I'm from Ocean View. Like, I'm an Ocean View girl. That's my tribe. That's where I'm comfortable. That's where I grew up. My father was a retired command master chief in the Navy. My mom is a retired teacher of 44 years. So they both love to tell me what to do and how to do it properly. I'm the oldest of three, the only girl. And growing up, I can say that I have an amazing family. I am so blessed with my family. But some things happened to me as a child that should never happen to a child. When I was five, a man that I knew and trusted and felt like he was my grandfather did things to me that really should not have happened. And the worst part was he told me if I told anyone, he would kill my parents and my brothers. Five-year-old is going to believe him because they know him and trust him. So I learned from the age of five to keep secrets. I kept secrets about everything. And it made me completely change as a person. So that's not the reason I'm an alcoholic, though, but it definitely contributed to life for me. My first panic attack was at age five. I remember the hyperventilating, the incessant thoughts, the just being completely irrational. I thought I was going to get in trouble at school, and my teacher told my dad, she's an amazing kid, I don't know what's wrong. So there's always been a disconnect for me. How I perceived you, how I perceived the world, was not how it was really happening for other people. But for me, I always felt different. I'm sure none of you have that feeling, but I had that feeling. I was never good enough. So I worked really, really hard at being a people pleaser. If you asked me what my favorite color was and you had on a red shirt, I might say, it's red. If you asked me if I like to drink soda, I would say, do you like to drink soda? So from a very young age, I was definitely a people pleaser. I was an academic. I felt safe in the world of academia. It was very easy for me. I didn't have to work hard at it. And I was the goody two shoes. I remember in the sixth grade, this girl, Sherry Faye, brought a four pack of James and Bartle and James wine coolers to my birthday party. First of all, what did she think four wine coolers was going to do with 20 girls at a party? But I told on her, because I was so good. Like, I was like, Mom, I don't know what to do. And so my mom, like, you know, moms do, just took care of it for me. I didn't drink or drug until the age of 16. There was alcohol in our house. My father, I'm Scottish and Irish, so my dad would come home every day and have a 12-pack. And we'll get to that in a minute. But my mom, she would drink, I think in my life, she's had less than five strawberry daiquiris. And she would take two sips of it and say, I don't like the way this is making me feel. What? Okay, so she has her own isms, though. But so I went off to, I was 16, I was doing acting. I was in a show in New York City and I snuck out of the hotel in Broadway. I went to a fraternity party in Harlem with my best friend. And I was drinking slow gin and grape soda. And I thought I was classy. I did not drink alcoholically the first night, but I did love the effect that alcohol produced. My mind got quieter. My mind was always racing. My shoulders got relaxed. I was like, all right, I can talk to these college boys. And I could not wait to do it again. I went off to a state school. My first year, I was so scared that I was going to fail out. I made dean's list. My second year, I pledged a sorority. I got politely asked not to come back the next semester. So I kind of, you know, starting to realize that maybe drinking was having some effect on my life, but it really was probably more that, it was drinking. So I failed out of college and I came back home and worked for a big airline for 3 years. And then I didn't like working. Like, I didn't like having to get up and be somewhere on time and be sober. So I went back to college. So I don't want to do the whole thing about college and all that, but I'm going to just fast forward. But consequences started to add up, you know, college, jobs, boyfriends, cars. I was a frequent at World Brothers when they had 25-cent drinks. I live in Ocean View. That's quite a hike to be driving from World Brothers at the oceanfront home. Never had any problems. So then I also had that anxiety problem from a child. So my doctor started giving me all these magical pharmaceuticals. When you add pharmaceuticals to alcohol, some bad things happen. So I will say the beginning of my consequences probably didn't really happen until my late 30s. And I basically started teaching because that was the expectation for me. I'm a fourth generation teacher. And teachers are expected to be on time, sober, all these things that I didn't like. So I always prided myself on the fact that I never drank at school. I drank probably till 2 or 3 in the morning, went to school, and I did a lot of pharmaceuticals at school because the doctor gave them to me, so it was okay. I was a nationally ranked teacher. I don't say that to impress you, but just to tell you where alcoholism can take you. I had students who, I specifically in the beginning taught the gifted and talented students, so the top 5% by intelligence, and I had an amazing experience with those children. Some I still have in contact with today. But as I was getting older, as I was having all these sort of situationships, I don't want to call them relationships, as I was going from job to job, as I was not able to manage my money, as I was sitting in front of doctor and doctor and doctor and saying, I really don't know what's wrong, there's something wrong with me. None of them ever said, maybe it's your drinking. So I was a teacher in Norfolk, and I'm single, surprisingly. No one wants to get with a hot mess express. I was single, I didn't have children. I did have a dog who I later had to make an amends to, because I may or may not have fed her. I may or may not come home to take her out. There were a lot of things that I may or may not do. I'm teaching in Norfolk, and I have never had a speeding ticket. I've never had any kind of interaction with the law. And it's the point of my drinking where I cannot stop. And it's a Friday afternoon, and I'm writing a paper about Braveheart, which I've seen like 30 times, and the words are like going like this on the screen, and I can't start a sentence, but I'm a teacher, so I don't know how to write a paper. And I got a little scared, so I called my doctor, and I said, something's wrong with me, and he said, whatever you do, don't go to the emergency room. I'll get you in with someone tomorrow. And I said, okay, and I hung up the phone, and I went immediately to the emergency room. And the doctor on call starts asking me these questions, and I start telling the truth. How many pills have you taken in the last 7 days? How many drinks have you had? man, did I regret that, because she put me on a hold and sent me over to Maryview by ambulance. And I was like, wait a minute, well, I just need an antidepressant. Like, this is a little overkill for what I need. And they put me in the locked unit. And one man had his Burger King little kids thing that was like shooting lights up on the ceiling, and that was his communication back to his home planet. One man didn't know who the current president was. One woman tried to choke me about 10 o'clock that night because she thought I was her daughter. And I'm screaming, get me out of here. I don't belong in here. And the nurse was really nice and said, you're exactly where you belong. You can see the doctor in the morning. So the doctor, who kept calling me princess, and I didn't really like that, described what was going on. That I was a severe alcoholic. Actually, I had a fancy hospital polysubstance abuse disorder, right? Basically an addict and an alcoholic. Basically a garbage can. I would do anything. You know, if I'm at a party and you have something, I'm willing to try it. So he sent me to my first AA meeting, which was at Maryview Hospital. It used to be a huge meeting. And I remember thinking, these people are full of crap. I almost said a bad word. Surprisingly. So anyway, these people are full of it. There's no way they're happy, they're not drinking. And I lasted about 6 days. Got out of the hospital and started drinking again. So I started in the other fellowship because someone had told me, and you know, we hear contempt prior to investigation. Someone had told me if you go to an AA meeting and you use the word drugs, you'll get beat up. So I was scared to go to AA, right? Because part of my story was pharmaceuticals. So I started in the other fellowship. The women were lovely. Every suggestion they gave me, I did the exact opposite. They said, don't get into a relationship. I got into a relationship. I had 60 days. He had 30 days. It was a match made in heaven. It was wonderful. We moved in together 3 months later. I didn't have a job or a car. He didn't have a job. I don't think he had a car, woman. I think, yeah. We didn't last very long. He asked my father for my hand in marriage, and my father said a very not nice expletive, no. And he said, she probably bought that ring because you don't have any money. And I had bought the ring. So anyway, I couldn't get clean. I couldn't get sober. Every suggestion that was given to me, I did the exact opposite. So then I got about a year, right, clean, and I left that fellowship. Came back to AA. And my first meeting was Bayview's Saturday night meeting. They used to have like three meetings going on. Al-Anon was going on, Alateen. It was wild. And I kept thinking, like, this place is a cult. Like, there's like the chanting and the hugging and the people telling you they love you and they're not stealing your purse. Mm-hmm. And my drinking and drugging just kept escalating and escalating, and I was getting frustrated. Why am I going to these meetings and I'm not getting sober? Right? Something is wrong. And I remember asking one of my girlfriends, and she said, well, you need a spiritual experience and you're not getting it. You're not willing to do the work. And I'm like, all right, Google spiritual experience. How do I have one? So life kept getting harder and harder. I got to the point in drinking that I was drinking every day. I was using pharmaceuticals every day. My life got to the point where as people were closing in on me, I was getting desperate to use because I didn't have a choice anymore, right? I had to have something inside me. I had to have something quiet the noise. I remember at one point my brothers had me locked in a house and made sure everything was gone. I just drank vanilla extract, right? I tried perfume once because I knew it had a lot. That one pissed off my mom really bad because she's like, it's $80 an ounce. Like, what alcohol? It took me to the emergency room, and the doctor said, you have got to let her drink. She's going to kill herself by putting weird chemicals in her mouth. So I'm back at teaching. I'm teaching at the school that I went to for a man that really sought after me to teach for him. It's a Friday in August, and I have to go to the football game because that's part of my requirements of my job. I go to get my hair done that afternoon, and I'm drinking mimosas. I show up at the game. It's raining, and I'm walking down the bleachers, and then it's complete blackout until I wake up in Virginia Beach Jail. So I had to have other people, like the deputies, help reconstruct the night for me. So what happened was I fell down the bleachers, knocked myself unconscious, was taken to the hospital, done a full workup, given pain medicine, sent on my way with another prescription for more pain medicine, took a cab back to my car, got in my car, drove to the oceanfront from downtown Norfolk to meet a guy, because there's always a guy in my stories. Because normal people, when they have head injuries, they go on a date. Right? So I'm on my date, I'm drinking there, I leave my date, I'm driving back. He said that I was talking to him on the phone through the car, and I say, hang on, I'll have to call you back, I'm getting pulled over. So I get pulled over, and I get arrested with a DUI with a high BAC. And they took me to jail, and the magistrate, this is where I'm starting to kind of come to, the magistrate says, you've never had a speeding ticket. You've never had anything. You need a really good lawyer. And you need to call your principal. And I was like, I'm not calling him. Like, it's Saturday morning. I'm like, no. He's like, teachers lose their job just for getting arrested. So I had to call my principal, and he said, were you drinking last night? No. Why? Well, the cop said that you smelled like alcohol when you knocked yourself unconscious. And I was like, oh, no. He must have been confused. So anyway, I had this week of this anticipation. Am I going to lose my job? What am I going to do? So I was given a letter of reprimand. I was given mandatory counseling. It started off at 3 sessions. Once she met me the first time, she said, you'll be coming at least a year every week. And I was like, overkill. Again, this is way overkill. This is not a big deal. And I had to go back to AA. So I went back to the rooms. And I struggled. Like, everyone else was having these amazing experiences, right? And all of the women were so kind to me. I would call them when I was intoxicated. I would call them on dates. I would call them. Now, I wouldn't call them when I, like, before I went on a date or before I drank. I just would wait. I don't like to talk to people on the phone in general unless I'm intoxicated. So that fall, things were going weird. I have bronchitis, I have pneumonia, I'm teaching at the school that I went to, and then October comes, and it's a Friday morning. Everything always happens to me on Fridays. It's a Friday morning at 7 o'clock, and I am strung out. And I have a student come up to me, and she said, Ms. McLean, we're really worried about you. And I was like, I know, I've had bronchitis. And she's like, no. We are really worried about you, and we want to pray for you. Now, I didn't teach at Norfolk Catholic or Norfolk Collegiate. I taught at a public school. and so I'm standing at the front of the room, and I'm like, prayer in school? I don't think we're supposed to do that. And I know I'm not supposed to be. And so as I'm having this conversation with myself, my students, the entire class gets up. They start moving desks out of the way. They form a circle. 2 football players are on either side of me. The girl comes up to me, puts her hand on my head, and she starts praying, and all of the kids are holding hands and listening. I can't get them to listen to me for anything. So I heard this voice, and I heard the voice another time, but I heard this voice, and it wasn't my voice, and it wasn't a delusion, I don't think, say, Elizabeth, if these kids care more about you than you care about you, you are endangering them. You, in fact, are hurting them. You need to leave immediately. So I called for a sub. I called my parents, even though I had the car had the blow and go and all that other stuff. I called my dad, and my mom said, is she getting arrested again? She hasn't even gone to court yet. And I said, no, just come get me. And I went to my doctor with my parents. And I looked at my doctor, and he had been working with me for about 6 years now, in and out of the rooms. And I said, you got to take me out. I'm hurting these kids. And he said, well, what happened? And I tell him, and he said, okay, if I write this letter, it's going to be the end of your career. And I said, I don't ever want to hurt another child. I need help. I can't stop. So he wrote a letter to my principal, and it said that I was a danger to myself and to my students, and that I needed to go on immediate medical leave. My principal didn't take it very well. Like, but I decided, okay, I'm done, right? Your students just did an intervention on you. You would be done. No, I was done for maybe 6 days, back into the rooms, back my tail between, picking up a white chip. Went on for a couple of months. This was in October. I didn't get sober until May. It was doing things like, one time I was at Old Donation and I'm on my knees and I'm praying. And I decide, I need a burning bush moment. That's the problem. I haven't had the Bill Wilson burning bush moment. I'm going to go outside and I'm going to set the bush on fire. And then the priest is walking towards me and I said, that's probably arson. And I've already got this court case. So I didn't do it. So I get in the car and I call a woman from AA and I tell her, I need a burning bush moment. That's what's wrong. And she's like, how many burning bush moments do you need? Your students just did an intervention on you. The time you were driving home and you almost clipped the bicyclist, but you missed him by 2 inches. The time that you dropped your nephew on his head because you were supposed to be babysitting while his mom was outside cutting the grass and got so trashed in an hour that you literally dropped the baby. Those are your burning bush moments. I was like, oh, couldn't do it, wouldn't do it. Life kept getting harder and harder and uglier, and I went to such extremes. I would come to your house, I would go through your medicine cabinet, and I would steal all your alcohol and probably your money because I would need to get more on the way home, and I didn't care who you were. I stole thousands of dollars. My dad was one of those like Depression-era guys who thought you should keep the cash in the toolbox. Just take 100 or 200 when you needed it, right? He's not going to notice. It got to the point where they were counting pills to make sure that I was taking them as prescribed. And this is where it gets to the end for me. I had taken my dad's medicine and I swapped it out. I needed a blue Oval pill, so I had white Oval. And in my intoxication, I decided to take 3 blue food color drops, shake them into the thing and shake the bottle of pills, boom, it'll work. Except it dissolved all the pills. So I wasn't done because I'm a good alcoholic. I took the blue marker and tried to hand paint them all. That didn't work either, so I got busted. So then there was a week in May and I had done this again to my dad where I had taken all of his pain medication and replaced it with Claritin, because that's not gonna hurt him. And I watched my father go to the cabinet in pain and go back and sit down and wait like 30 minutes and be like, why isn't this helping? And I just watched day after day and never said a word. And by that Friday, again, everything happens on Fridays for me, I was in my psychiatrist's office. And again, I told the truth about myself. I was like, I've gone to AA, I've done this, I've done that, I've gone to rehab. I went to a 28-day rehab to try to save a relationship. I came home and drank that day, the day that I got released, because I didn't have a solution, right? I just had a lot of knowledge. I was really good at Dr. Google and I. So I'm in my psychiatrist's office. He tells me he's gonna put me on a psych hold. This is why you don't tell the truth to anyone. He put me into Virginia Beach Psychiatric Hospital, and I'm sitting there, and I call my friend Amy, and she's like, you know, maybe you pray for a different experience. And I was like, that's the dumbest thing anyone's ever told me. She's like, what do you have to lose? I mean, you've been in the psych hospital 3 times, you've lost your job, your parents don't trust you, you've lost relationships. So I decided maybe this time I'll listen to someone else's suggestion. So I started doing things that I hadn't been doing before, like I got a sponsor who knew she was my sponsor, who actually sat down and went line by line in the book with me. I started going to meetings every day. Now, I am not one that believes that meeting makers make it. But I will say in the beginning that the regularity of being around people who I could tell these stories to, and they would not look at me like I was an alien with three heads. They could say, I've done that too, or I've been there too, or I understand what you were thinking. So I went to a lot of meetings, and I went to meeting different types of meetings, speaker meetings, big book meetings. I went to a big book step study every week. I would drive to the oceanfront because for whatever reasons, I couldn't find a meeting in Ocean View that worked for me. And slowly I started praying. I had had this terrible, terrible relationship. My God was a punishing Old Testament. You do bad, you will get bad. Bad things had happened to me. God hated me. Why am I going to trust God? Why am I going to turn my life and my will over to God? No, I have a problem with that whole, 12 steps. But the women in the room started teaching me how to be a woman. If you say you're going to be somewhere, you're there. If you say that you want to recover, then you start to take those suggestions and stop balking at us. Stop changing sponsors every time we tell you not to get into another relationship. So my first sponsor, she took me through. I got to step four. And then my second sponsor, she got me through, and then I got to step three. My next sponsor, she took me through, and then I was like, wait a minute. I don't think the problem is them. I think the problem is me. So I found a sponsor that I could be pretty rigorously honest with. 90% of the time, which was a big improvement. And I went through the 12 steps, and things started changing pretty dramatically. But in the beginning, I would tell you, I have 36 days sober. You should be trusting me now with your credit card. I've got 36 days sober. You should definitely forgive me for everything I've ever done to you. I went to an old employer, and I admitted everything I had done. And 2 hours later, he looked at me and said, I don't think this is the way it's supposed to work. I think you're supposed to be apologetic and not just want forgiveness. I was like, oh, that's why they say that an amends is, without a change of behavior, is just a manipulation. Because I wanted the relief. In the beginning for me, some people come in and they have this amazing, beautiful experience, pink cloud. I was miserable. Take drinking away from me, take pills away from me. I'm left with me. I'm left with all that garbage that made me want to drink. I'm left with that head that is so insane that first year. I thought I was going to be homicidal. I thought I was going to be suicidal. I probably was every kind of suicidal that they could have been. I got worse, not better, or so I thought. Because in the beginning, again, I want that burning bush moment. I want to have the most spectacular, I think I should be the DCM with 3 months sober, because that seems like a cool thing to do, but I really don't want to do the work behind the job. I just want the accolades. I need you to love me because I hate me and I am a chameleon. I will, if I'm going to we call it the pretty people meeting at the oceanfront, I want to be one of them. Okay, I'm not working, I'm living with my parents, I've probably completely ruined my career forever, but I should have a new Porsche every year, right? Just got to find the man that'll give it to me, right? Didn't work so well. So that first year was really hell for me. I was going through the motions, but what really saved my life was that I finally realized a lot of things about myself. One, my conception of God was the Santa Claus God, right? I do bad, I get bad. So my sponsor's like, you can create whatever higher power you want. That's the beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't have to be the one that you grew up with. And I will say that even at 5 years sober, I still really struggle in this area. Like some people get it and that it changes their life. I'm beginning to believe that I'm not a person who was punished. I'm beginning to believe that I was attacked by a very sick man and that I have genetics. I talked about my dad doing a 12-pack a day. 13 years ago, his doctor looked at him and said, your heart is, it's out of rhythm. You can only drink 2 beers a day. And my dad's like, what's the point of 2 beers a day? I'll stop today. He stopped that day. He doesn't have the same thing I have. It took me 7 years in and out of the rooms, getting more pain, more pain, more frustration, until finally I had that moment where, again, that voice that I heard, you know, it's funny, when I was in, I'm gonna jump back to my DUI, I called my ex-boyfriend, because there's always, again, always a guy involved, and I said, hey, I got a DUI, I need you to represent me in court. He was like, okay, so I go to the hospital, get all of the medical documents, I'm prepared, I'm gonna argue my head injury, it was the reason why I was drinking and driving. We were standing outside of the courtroom, and it's the first time I've ever been afraid. A lot of people talk about being afraid. Like, I was afraid of you, but I wasn't really so much afraid in life. But that judge had dominion over my life, so I was a little afraid of him. And so I went in and I pled guilty. Again, AA was teaching me to do the honorable thing, to be honest. I really wanted to argue with him that I had that head injury. The reason I had the head injury is because I was drinking and driving, and drinking and working, and drinking and dating, and drinking and this. So the judge said, well, you have a perfect record until now, and you're a teacher, so I'm gonna give you 4 times across the board what you should get. And I was like, he's like, no, since you were honest, I'm gonna give you the minimum, but you are going to jail for 5 days. I'm like, wait a minute, I have to teach. And he's like, you gotta figure that out. So in jail, on the way, I'm Googling, what is the best way to handle jail? Okay, so I like binge watched, you know, Orange is the New Black. I thought it was gonna be like that. I was in, because of my alcoholism, I was in the Virginia Beach pink room. If anyone's ever been in there or been in Virginia Beach jail, there's no lovely little barriers. Actually, there's no even beds in this particular room, the hospital ward. There's a little mattress, and you're naked and given a suicide smock that they do not clean in between people. Talk about insanity. Me with 30 other women who, some of them are intoxicated, some of them are fighting with each other. I'm in there giving career and legal and financial and marriage advice.
Yeah.
Because my big brain is going to help solve your problem. And wait, what's that voice again? You need to shut the blank up, Elizabeth. You're in here too. And I was like, oh my God. So jail was good for me for a little while, until it wasn't. So back to my career. So I'm in AA, I'm not teaching, I'm going to all these meetings, I'm meeting with this woman, I'm going to dinner after the meeting with other alcoholics and conversing. I am super introverted. Like, going to Walmart, I need to go home and take a nap because it's too many people. But I'm doing these things, and slowly that first year goes by. I get through the 12 steps, and then I realize, oh man, now I have to do it again. But major changes were happening in my life. I was being trusted again with my niece and nephew, asked to pick them up from school, put them in a car with me, drive them home. I changed home groups, which was really important for me. I needed a home group that had more structure and carried the message. I changed home groups. I started service work and actually did it for the right reason, not just so that I looked good. I was doing it so that I could be of service to others. And one of the really cool things that happened was at 5 years sober, I ran into one of those kids that did an intervention on me. He works at McDonald's. And he was like, how are you? I think about you all the time. And I could honestly look at this child and make an amends to him. Tell him, you know, I'm okay. I got sober. I'm not teaching. People always ask me, I didn't lose my license. I decided that until I know 1,000% that I will never endanger another child, I don't want to step back in the classroom. I'm now taking care of my parents who are elderly, they're 77. And what that looks like is I made a formal amends to them, but I also make a living amends. You know, my father has dementia, and some days he'll look at me and say, I know that I named you, but I can't remember your name. You know, I get to walk out fear for him. I know that my mother, her anger will come out, her fear comes out as anger, and she, you know, so I get to balance between the two of them. I have an amazing relationship with my niece and nephews. The other day we were at Mexican, and I said, may I have a lime with my water? And my niece thought I said, can I have a glass of wine? She's like, you don't drink? What? What? She's 14. Last week we were in the car, and I looked down. She had shorts on, and I realized she's been cutting herself. So I asked her about it, and she said, oh, no, the cat did that. And I'm like, oh. See, my fear is my niece is one of us, just in training. When she was really little, she loved cough syrup. She loved the way it made her feel. So now I see this, and I was like, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say. I know as a teacher what I'm supposed to do and say. So I said, well, I don't believe that the cat did that. Do you want to try again? And she said, no. And I said, well, that's really not an option. You have to tell me what's going on. And so she did. And I said, you know, I never lie to you. I've never lied to you now that you're old enough to understand things. I have to tell your parents or you have to tell your parents. You have until 10 o'clock tonight to decide. I don't know what that is. That's not me. Me, I'm usually the secret keeper, right? Because that's how I grew up, keeping secrets. So she told her mom, I told my brother, and my sister-in-law came to me and said, you know, 6 years ago, you wouldn't have even been in the car with her or been sober or been able to do what you needed to do, which is get her help. Thank you. Like, thank you for being a part of our family. And I'm like, oh my God. I hope that my niece is gonna get, you know, the right help that she needs. I also, with her, was able to go to a forensics competition recently. And it was at the school that I taught at last. And I have not been in that building in 6 years. And I didn't talk about it with anyone. I just was like, you got to show up and do what you're supposed to do. So I'm in the building. I walk by my old classroom. I'm getting, like, flashbacks. I'm starting to feel like, you know, like, oh, God, this isn't going to, I got to get out of here. But I needed to be there for my niece. And the janitor came up to me and said, where have you been? And I said, well, I'm not teaching. He's like, I know that, but like, what's going on? And I said, well, you know what? I'm a recovering alcoholic. And I don't usually tell people that because I don't want, you know, I don't want to send the wrong image of what an alcoholic looks like, but I will tell you that's what's going on with me. And he's like, okay, because we just didn't understand. So one of my really good friends who was a sponsor, I called her and we talked about, again, that disease of perception. Like the person that I will present to you and the person that you see are not the same people. But the person that I live with on the inside is full of fear, is full of anxiety, is never enough. And that's been a challenge for me living a life of sobriety today because I always feel like principles before personalities, yes, but other people don't seem to struggle as much as I do. Like, I'm supposed to have it together, right? I hit the 5-year mark, that's like, you get like the golden prize and you're good. But then I have friends who have been sober 20 and 30 and 40 years and they still struggle with life. But the most beautiful part of all of that is I don't do it alone today. Like, I have an amazing God squad of women and men, but I do have to admit, I have to be really careful with the men, because that's one of my isms, you know, flirt a little bit. I used to flirt with a pharmacist so that I would get my pills faster, and I would only go to male pharmacists. I had 6 pharmacists, throughout the city and some, anyway. That's how addiction can play out for me. But I do have women who are able to walk it through with me today. I don't do it alone. For me, that connection with a higher power, I will say that my mind is quieter. Life did get better. I wasn't able to, you know, have all the things in life that I thought I wanted. Like, and the story that I tell myself is usually because I'm a piece of crap and I don't deserve it. But the truth is, it's usually me that's doing it, right? The fourth step, when I look at that last column and I have to see my part of things, just have to take a deep breath. Because I am the problem, right? That was that one song by Taylor Swift, I'm the problem. I must be the problem. You know, I still get in trouble today. Like, I still get in fear, and I still act out in ways that I shouldn't. I thought once I hit 5 years that it was time to start dating. Yeah, no. My sponsor tried to talk me out of it. My therapist tried to talk me out of it, and I was like, "Oh no, no! I'm a recovered woman. I can date now." Yeah, that. If you want to see like the glaringly sick parts of your life, if you're a single person, reach out on a dating app to someone and explain, "Oh yeah, no, that's not what I'm looking for. I don't need more insanity in my life." But anyway, my last date that I went on, the gentleman had three drinks and passed out of his chair. And I thought, what a lightweight. Like, I'd just be getting started. So I helped him up off the floor, and I was like, you know, and he said, why aren't you drinking? And I said, I don't drink. And he's like, why? And I said, because I'm an alcoholic. Do you want to talk about that maybe? And so I 12-stepped him. Right, and he's got 27 days sober right now. So I invited him tonight. He lives right down the street, but he was golfing or something. I don't know. But I will say that the really cool thing is that in my home group, I have a place, and I hope that you have this place too, where I can go and I can be real. I can be honest about the insanity that still happens in my head. I can be authentic. I can be messy. I can say things to my home group members like, this is what I've done now. What do you guys think? And, you know, and like Amy said last week, I've never been met with, what the F? Or what are you doing now, crazy lady? It's always, well, let's get in the book. Or let's find out what the book might say. Or let's talk about the 12 steps. And what step are you working right now? It's not Elizabeth's version of the 12 steps. Because a lot of times I'm still working my version, but I am seeking, right? Right now my current mantra is first thought wrong, because my thinking is really at the center of my disease. I think that I can outthink any of you, right? There's a gentleman in Virginia Beach that's famous for being quite something. I was gonna say, anyway, he's quite talkative, and the other day at a meeting, he said, I'm the smartest person in the room, and I thought, all right, it's my turn. I got called on, and I said, I'm going to challenge you. Let's take a test after the meeting and see who's smarter, and we had a good laugh about it. I was smarter, by the way. It is great to be able to be in a meeting where you know, like I said, I still go to a lot of different types of meetings, but I try to be there to be of service, step 12. I have two sponsees that I'm working with right now. I have a half sponsee, which means she's somewhere in the world doing whatever she's doing. I haven't heard from her recently. And then I have a woman who I was working with, and she's kind of in between sponsees. And the beauty of it is I get to see like the different versions of me play out in other people, right? I've done that, or I've thought that way too, or yep, I've been there before, or I did something similar. When I did my first fifth true, honest fifth step, the woman I did it with, was like, there is absolutely nothing you can tell me that I will not love you or I will judge you in any way because I've done those things too. And I was like, buckle up, buttercup, because I've done some crazy stuff. And she didn't judge me. At the end of it, I felt lighter, I felt more free. And it was a pretty amazing thing. I will say that one of the most important things for me today, though, is like being honest with myself about my program. Like, I can get complacent, and I'll say, oh, it's because I'm an introvert, right? I don't really like people. It takes too much energy. You guys are always telling me to be of service to other people, which means I have to, like, get out of my own head and be there for others, and I have to be honest, that's not easy for me. Like, I just want to be curled up in my room with my little puppy. She's not that little anymore, but I mean, I'll use her as an excuse why I can't do something. I have really a lot of medical conditions. I'll use that as an excuse. And then I'll have a woman call me on the phone and I will hear that in her voice. You know, I will hear the pain. I will hear the sorrow. I will hear, please help me. And I'm like, all right, higher power, let me see what I can do. And if it's just sitting there and letting someone be honest for an hour while they talk about what's going on in their life, at the end of that hour, I'm reminded of the beauty of this life, right? It's not perfect for me. I'm not teaching yet. I'm living with my parents still. I still have crazy thoughts about setting bushes on fire and breaking the law. I think it's because I think cops are hot and I just want to spend more time with them. But that might not be it. But judges scare me, so I need to stay away from that. But the cool thing is that I don't have to do it perfectly, right? And being a member of a home group, being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous has given me that ability to. Like, I had this crazy thing, and I'll end with this. I had this crazy thing where I was gifted a scholarship to take yoga instruction. Yoga, right? Namaste, peace, love, butterflies. I got kicked out of training for being a bad student at 5.5 years sober. I might have had a resentment or two after that one, but again, I didn't do it alone. I, you know, called my friends, I called my sponsor, I did a 10 step on it, I did lots of 10 steps on it, and then I realized, like, my part of it, and I can take training again if I want to, but I didn't have to drink over it. I didn't rush out, you know, like, I had Easter dinner past weekend. There's no way I could be with my family and extended family for 5 hours without having a drink or a drug in me. I used to have to, like, you know, hide it in different places and go out to the car a couple of times. And I was able to really be fully present for my family and for myself. So if you're new and none of this made any sense to you, that's okay. If you have been around and none of this made any sense to you, you can talk to your sponsor about it, or you're welcome to talk to me about it. But the cool thing is, this program saved my life. Like, I literally should have died many times or been in prison for a long time. And I did not do it alone. And for that, I will always be grateful. Thanks for letting me share.